There is only one thing that you can control in your life. That's your thoughts. You can choose to be happy or you can choose to be miserable. It's just that simple. Join me for the next hour on Law of Attraction Talk Radio, where I hope to inspire you to make the conscious decision to be happy. For that is the exact place where you need to be to create your own magnificent reality. Let us begin now. Well, welcome. This is Jules from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm so glad you could join us tonight because we got a real special show for you. Tonight we are going to interview Elise Baller, who is a filmmaker, an actress, an author, everything. And she wrote this most magnificent book called Epiphany. This is about people who have changed their lives in a moment, in a flash, because of a thought that came to them. And it's so brilliant. She has interviewed people such as Deepak Chopra, Maya Angelou, all of these wonderful people that it just inspires you to keep an open mind, because you never know when something is going to be said to you or your moment of an epiphany is going to change your life. It's a great opportunity to get inspired, so stay tuned. The best of the show is coming right up, right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
In today's world, the need to know about high-quality nutritional health products is extremely important. As a matter of fact, it can save your life. BetterWayHealth.com is only a phone call away to help you get what you need to re-energize every cell of your body, especially if you are currently having medical treatment. From transfer point beta-glucan that helps the immune system, to Barlean's flax oil that is an effective body cleanse, to amazing grass products shown to have superb nutritional value, to Jupiter water ionizers that balance the alkaline and acidity in your body, BetterWayHealth.com is your one-stop shop to healthier living. So whether you have cancer or diabetes, or whether you're just interested in preventative care, visit us at BetterWayHealth.com. We are here to help you.
You know, there is nothing better than getting together with like-minded people to bring joy into your life. On our last Law of Attraction Radio Network cruise, I made so many wonderful friends. As we went out to Key West and then NASA, we captured the essence of the very best that life can offer. And you know what? That's what we're supposed to do. Enjoy life. We not only laugh during our powerful workshops, we laugh before, after, and even in between. I want to invite you on our very affordable cruise coming up on April 30th, 2012, out of the Port of Long Beach. Get more information at loaradionetwork.com. Join us and join the fun. And that is Amore. See you on board. Have you been receiving your free issue of Alms Times magazine in your email box? Every 2 weeks you'll receive this top quality magazine that has spiritual, metaphysical, and scientific information that will rock your world. Go to almstimes.com, OMTIMES.com, to sign up for your free subscription today. Okay, we're back. I want to remind you of the incredible cruise coming on up, and it's filling up fast. Now is the time to sign up. And for those of you who feel that they are not able to manifest the monies, give me a shout. Let's talk about it and see what we can do. This energy cruise is something that you just don't want to miss. All of the healers coming on. I mean, talk about an epiphany. You are going to have some life-changing moments on there, and you're going to be dancing off of that ship deckway. Oh, it's going to be great. Oh, it's going to be great. So come on and sign up today. Go to loaradionetwork.com. You know, all kinds of things have been happening, and it's great. 2012 is such a fascinating year, and it's all about the economy. And you will notice every single show I have is somehow stressing the fact that we create our reality. And our money situation is not predicated on our government or the global economic outlook. It is based upon source energy. In other words, there is plenty of money in this universe. Plenty of money. And the word money is not evil. It's great. There's no reason why you can't say to yourself, I love money, and money loves me. Now, if you say that, and you feel as if there's something that's saying, oh, that's not feeling right, well, aren't you lucky? Because that's going to lead you into the belief that has kept you from your divine right of wealth. So take that statement and use it all week until the final answer comes to you of what it represents in your belief system. Say to yourself, I love money and money loves me. Are you afraid of saying that out in public to people for fear that people will think that you're greedy or that you're manipulating or that there's something wrong with that statement and how others will view you? Well, that's a belief that is still stopping you from accepting and from going forward into your wealth. 2012 is about focusing on our economy. It's a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity for all spiritual people, not necessarily religious people, but spiritual people who understand that we are all connected as one. For these spiritual people to become economically abundant, for us to become wealthy so that we can release the need for the control of others around us. You know, there's a thing in the Bible that says, and the meek shall inherit the earth. I kind of understand what that means, and it's becoming more and more true in 2012. So I hope that you will gather with me in our energy and create the wealth in order to change the world. And we can do this because source is abundant. Source is energy. We are energy, and money is energy. It's all a part of it. So stay tuned week after week, and if I keep on bringing up this thing about money and prosperity, understand that we're on a mission. We're on the mission to end the disease known as poverty. It doesn't need to be. If we can just get and correct our belief system, we're off and running. So I hope you'll stay with me and join me for this ride. It's not so much that money is so important. It's that we need to know how powerful we are and our power to create a magnificent new future. There's nothing wrong with having money, is there? You need to tell me. You need to refocus in on what's blocking you from being very prosperous, very happy, very loving, and having a wonderful and fabulous 2012. So, let's get going on with tonight's show with Elise Ballard. I am so tickled to have her here. She is such a fascinating person anyway, always up to something. I think she just got back from Europe. So let's tune in. Well, welcome, Elise. Thank you so much for coming on. I am thrilled.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's thrilling to be here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Hey, I love your book, Epiphany. It is so fantastic. And to hear all of these life-changing moments for people, as really notable people like Deepak Chopra and Maya Angelou, and tell us about what made you get into this Epiphany book.
Well, what originally sparked the idea for the book was, you know, I had an epiphany. Of course, I didn't realize I had an epiphany. I had an epiphany that caused me to leave a marriage that had not been working for years. And I finally left because of this one moment, this one realization. And I didn't realize it until about 2 months later when my life was completely different. And I woke up one day and just went, you know, how did I get here? Because everything was just a completely different scenario. And my mind flashed back to that moment. And I went, you know what? That was an epiphany. I mean, in that one moment, I changed so drastically that I was able to drastically change my life. And that is what they talk about when they talk about having an epiphany. So I started asking other people if they'd ever had moments like these, and they had, you know, my friends, my colleagues. And I'm a filmmaker. I was an actress and a filmmaker. And so I started, when I was working, I started asking people on the fly, you know, what they thought their greatest epiphany in life was. And people were so interesting and fascinating when they would tell me their stories. That, you know, I was like, this is entertaining. This is getting interesting. But what was more important is I would find myself thinking about what they told me, and I was utilizing their epiphanies, their discoveries, their realizations in my life. So it was helping me and it was inspiring me. And sort of one thing led to another, and I talked to someone about it, that I was going to do a film by just cobbling all these together. And then he ran a production company in L.A., and he wanted to do it as a reality show or a documentary. And then I started writing these treatments for that, and I started realizing how powerful they were in the written word. And then one thing led to another, and I ended up talking to publishers and got an agent, and I ended up doing a book with Random House, you know, and that's how the book came about. Now, the people that I interviewed, like Desmond Tutu and Maya Angelou, I always ask everyone whose epiphany they would know about if they could ask anyone in the world. So Maya Angelou is an example of that. Stacey Lannert, who's in my book, that's who she said, and a lot of other people had suggested her, so I just reached out to her and interviewed her. She was amazing. And Desmond Tutu had inspired me, and I'd interviewed someone that he had helped and inspired. And just I talk about there's four things that happen with every epiphany I noticed after hundreds and hundreds of interviews: listening, belief, action, and serendipity. And I would say that serendipity has played an enormous role in this project and in all the people that I ended up having the privilege of interviewing. So,
well, you've said a lot of these words, but for the average person, we really don't know the absolute definition of epiphany or even serendipity. Could you help us out?
Sure. An epiphany has a myriad of definitions, but I went to the dictionary. A lot of people ask me this. And the simplest, for me, definition of an epiphany is it's a moment of sudden or great revelation. And then I say that usually changes your life in some way, because I'm asking about people's greatest epiphanies in life, the biggest ones, the ones that have had the biggest impact. But an epiphany, by definition, is a moment of sudden or great revelation. And we have little ones all the time as well. Serendipity is, and I sometimes I mess up this definition from the dictionary, because I couldn't decide if it was serendipity or synchronicity. And, you know, both play, right?
Right.
But serendipity is defined somewhat along the lines of seemingly accidental occurrences that happen. And So,
kind of like miracles?
Well, a miracle is, by definition, which is a section of my book, is an occurrence that happens that's inexplicable by natural law. So that's what a miracle is. So serendipity, you know, sometimes it's, yeah, completely explicable by natural law. You know, but it's just seemingly accidental occurrences that then guide or seem to lead to other happenings in one's life. I mean, I am completely paraphrasing, but there are very slight differences between the terms, but that's why we picked serendipity for it. I should memorize that definition more appropriately. I apologize.
No, that's wonderful. But tell us, I mean, your book has miracles in it, coming of age, healings, really with fantastic people, and awakening. Tell us Maya Angelou's epiphany.
Oh, I love her epiphany. And you know what? I'm writing for positivelypositive.com right now. Okay. We just launched a blog with them. And we just featured her epiphany this week. And so her epiphany, an excerpt of it, her epiphany was so amazing for me because as a storyteller, you know, I got on the phone with her and that voice, you know, that beautiful voice, if you've ever heard it. And she's like, you know, Miss Ballard, and so I asked her the question, and she hadn't even known what the question was going to be, unfortunately, because I'd given it, but she doesn't need it, because she said, well, you know, I'm sure everyone's had at least 250 epiphanies, you know, because the one you had when you were 10 then informed the one that you had when you were 15, and so on and so on, and I was like, yes, and then she proceeded to tell me a story about when she was 17, how when she brought her baby son home, she was terrified. She was terrified. She didn't know what to do, and the baby was going to sleep with her, and she was scared she'd roll over on the baby. And she woke up in the middle of the night, and she had made a tent over the baby with her arm. And her mom said, "You see, baby, when you mean good, you do good." Something like that. Then she goes into the other story when she was 22, and this is what I excerpt on Positively Positive. She was 22. She was in a class with a bunch of people in San Francisco with a voice teacher, and it was all people much more educated, older, accomplished, I think all white as well. And so she was in the class, and he made her read from, that's what they would have everybody read from a book. And one of her lines was, "God loves me." And he goes, "Stop, read it again." And she goes, "God loves me." And he said, "Stop, read it again." And she felt embarrassed and frustrated and humiliated. She felt like he was purposely humiliating her. So she got mad and said it with a lot of force. And, you know, because she was mad. She was like, "God loves me," you know, like really with force. And in that instant, she had an epiphany. She went, "That which made the sun and the moon and the mountains and the bees, you know, that made me. There is nothing good that I can't do." She said, you know, "I could weep with the knowledge some 50 years later of the joy that I am loved by love itself, and there is nothing good that I can't do." You know, and when you go read it, I barely edited anything out. It's like she spoke these stories, you know, it was, because a lot of them I worked, you know, a lot on editing and stuff. I mean, I practically could have left every word in. It was just such an amazing, she's such a master of the spoken word and the written word. It was amazing. So I always use that, "There is nothing good that we can't do," a lot, as an affirmation almost in my own life, for like when I get discouraged by my own life, when I screw up, when things seem to not be going well or are really tough. And when I seem overwhelmed by the world at large, what's going on, you know, and like, you know, and I just go, "Wait a minute, there's nothing good that we can't do." And it's true, because there isn't anything good that we can't do if we put our minds to it. Oh. You know, there's so much good in the world. So that one's been really important for me, and about realizing what it means to be loved by love itself. What is that exactly? What does that mean? How is that, you know, it's been a big one.
Give me another example of another epiphany in the book. One of your favorites besides Maya.
Gosh, one of my other favorites, well, you know, I love all of them, and some of them are super dramatic, you know, and miraculous, and crisis, you know, an amazing epiphany coming out of a serious crisis, and some are very subtle, internal shifts in perception, basically, that then take a life on a whole new direction. So there's just, they run the gamut, and all of them have had a profound impact on my life, or they wouldn't be in the book, because we had to, I couldn't even put all the ones I wanted to in the book. So I would say a big one for me personally was Kristen Neff. Kristen Neff is a psychologist at the University of Texas, and hers was all about self-compassion. And when I heard her, and she went on because of this epiphany to, she's now a leading expert in self-compassion in Western psychology. It had never been introduced really into Western psychology. She was one of the leading people to start studying it and doing, you know, trials and clinical exams about that. And she, her book came out in April, I believe, last April in 2011. And, but when I spoke with her, I didn't know what she was going to talk about. I thought she was going to talk about the horse boy, which is she and her husband went on this incredible journey to get help for their son who was severely autistic. And Rupert, her husband, is also in the book. And on this journey, when they went, he had an epiphany about, you know, he had an epiphany that he needed to get a son with shamans and horses, because he'd seen the child break through in those moments. So we ended up having an epiphany that Mongolia is where that happens. And so they went to Mongolia and they went on this incredible journey, and the child is incredibly better, you know, incredibly so. And they started a foundation with horses working with autistic children, et cetera. So I thought that her epiphany had something to do with that. No, her greatest epiphany is about this self-compassion. And she went to a Buddhist retreat when she was in grad school, and the person said, if you don't have compassion for yourself, it's impossible to really have compassion for others.
Wow.
And so in her thing, she said this, and this is what did it for me. She goes, you know, I wouldn't speak half as harshly to my friends as I do to myself. What am I doing? Stop it. You know? And for me, it wasn't like, you know, oh, treat yourself like your mom or your dad would or whatever, because that never really made sense to me. She said, treat yourself like your own best friend. And for me, I went, oh, my God, that's what I do. I'm horrible to myself in the way that I speak to myself interiorly. And so it started me gradually catching myself doing it. And then I will, you know, say, hey, and I'll speak to myself like I would one of my friends, you know, because our friends beat our women mainly. We beat ourselves up, and our girlfriends are like, what are you talking about? You're insane. You look fantastic. You're this, you're that. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And we mean it. We're not just saying that. And so anyway, it's self-compassion for me has really been a huge healing tool. With Maya Angelou's, Desmond Tutu's was a big one for me. One's about healing. One's about career. Careers. I have a whole section called The Callings. And, you know, people honoring their gifts and talents is such an important. I just spoke at TED, and I spoke to kids about that, you know, how you may not know you're having an epiphany, but you've got to follow what makes your heart sing, because it will guide you. I've interviewed so many people now. I know that that's true, you know. So anyway, those are just a little glimpse of some of the stuff that's affected me.
That is wonderful. I want to show everybody the picture of the book here, because it is absolutely great. Not only will it inspire other people to go forward, but it, even with you writing this book, you have expanded this even out more through your last experience in Europe. Will you share that with us? It's so fabulous.
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, it was fabulous. I, you know, one of my dreams came true. I went to the Nobel Prizes. And when I started my project with Epiphany, I really, one of my goals was to interview, have Nobel laureates in it. And I did get Desmond Tutu, who's a Nobel laureate. He won the Peace Prize. But I wanted to also talk to medicine and you know, economics and chemistry and people, all the Nobel laureates. And I went, they invited me to go. And people were like, how did you get to go? And I said, I asked. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just like I get the people, and people always ask me, how'd you get so-and-so in the Epiphany? How'd you get all these people? And I said, I asked, you know? and some people that I asked, I already knew, you know, and they knew my work, or I'd worked with them, or they were friends. And some people I just cold called. And the Nobel Prizes, I have written this book, and I have done a lot of work in writing and interviewing people. And I wrote to them and said I'd really like to come. And I have an idea that I'd like to incorporate in a television show I'm working on. And so I wanted to do that. And so anyway, we got to go. I went with my friend Ariane de Bolvensaw, and she's in my book as well. And we went over there and interviewed the laureates in economics, chemistry, and physics. And then we flew to Oslo, and we went to the Nobel Peace Prizes.
Wow.
And wow. Three women won this year. I don't know if everybody knows that, but three women won. Two of them were from Liberia, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, and I always pronounce the other woman's name wrong. I'm going to pronounce her name wrong. She ran the peace movement in Liberia. And then the other woman that won is from Yemen, and she is the youngest person to ever win the Nobel Peace Prize. And she is the second Arab to ever win and the first Arab woman. She's only 32. And what these women have done with practically no resources, it is just so inspiring. And the love and the power that was coming off of them. And I got to go to all the press conferences and all the events. I didn't get to interview them one-on-one. But it was just remarkable, and I don't think I'll ever be the same, you know. But so my goal is to write about that experience sort of behind the scenes of you know, an American girl, you know, behind the scenes at the Nobel Prizes and you know, what that was like. And because I got some behind-the-scenes scoop, so to speak. And I interviewed people who run the Nobel Prizes, which was interesting, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we interviewed the director of the Nobel Prizes. So, it's really interesting.
Well, let's go back to the women, because the youngest one, you had told me earlier, there was a really unique story about her, and it went beyond peace or anything. It really was about love. Could you kind of, it's a beautiful, beautiful story.
Well, okay, so we were talking to the woman who runs the Nobel Peace Center, and she was telling us about her interactions with them and such, and we said, well, where's her husband? She's got three kids and a husband. And we were like, oh, and we saw pictures of them and stuff in the Nobel Peace Center, but we didn't really know the behind-the-scenes story. And she said, oh, he's with her. He never leaves her side. And we were like, what? And, you know, they're from Yemen. Like, Yemen, from what I understand, is extremely conservative and repressive. And she's been leading a peace movement to do away with the dictatorship there, human rights for all. And so
not just women, but for all.
Human rights for all. And that's her big message. She said, this isn't just about women. This is about men and children. And all of us deserve human, you know, basic human dignity and rights and love. Well, we found out that this man was 20 years older than her. Now, I didn't verify fact check this. So, but this is what I was told that's so inspiring to me, that he's 20 years older. They've been married for a while because they've got three kids. I think they've been married 15 years or so. And he never leaves her side. And when he asked this woman that I spoke to, he said, what do you think of me? Because they had just started traveling because she had received the Nobel Peace Prize. And she said, well, I admire you so much and I am inspired by you. And he was shocked. Because everyone in his country, for the most part, according to this woman, revile him or mean to him, hate him, for him supporting and standing up for his woman, you know, allowing her to be outspoken and lead this movement and loving her that way. And our hypothesis is that one of the reasons that and when you see this woman speak and you know, see the photos of her, this love is just emanating from her, you know, and this power, and she has no bitterness, you know, that she's just standing up for everyone's rights because she's had this love of a man in one of the most sort of repressed countries in that way. Do you know what I mean? Between men and women, from what I understand. So, I mean, it's such a love story in some regards. The love of him and him being willing to be ridiculed and, you know, his forward thinking and liberal mindedness for that country and loving his wife the way he does, is allowed her to go on and empowered her to then help others. And, you know, we always hear about the great women behind the men, and now we're starting to hear these stories of the great men behind the women, you know. Yeah, it's just a beautiful love story about, you know, of her having no, being able to have no bitterness growing up with this man and then being able to spread that then. You know, Alison Armstrong's in my book. And one of the reasons I put her there is that she's teaching men and women about understanding each other. You know, and you think, oh, relationship guru, whatever. But her goal is to promote that peace between men and women so that we can spread peace through the world.
Oh.
That's where it starts, at that little building block, right? Between a man and a woman, to their kids, to the neighbors, to the village, to the city, to the state, to the country, to another country. Yeah. So I thought that was, I think her philosophy is amazing, and here's an example of it.
Wow, that is good. That is very interesting. And it seems like it's not just with men, but it would be with, towards other women as well. You know, sometimes women can be other women's worst enemies, you know? So do you know what I'm saying?
It's true, yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's funny.
So it's, that would hold true for everybody, yeah. It really does take a village to help you thrive in every way.
Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful example of the power of love, for sure.
Well, give us some other things that happened while you were there.
Nobel Prizes? Well, we interviewed the director of the Nobel Prizes, so that was really interesting, their philosophy. It was so funny. They have an open-door policy. It's such a beautiful... Do you know they have this concert that's like the Academy Awards or something? Like Helen Mirren and Rosario Dawson were the MCs. They had David Gray and Sugarland and all these like amazing big name music acts. It was crazy.
Wow.
I had no idea, you know, this goes on every year. Oprah MC'd it one year.
You would think that it would be televised in the U.S., don't you?
I know, and every year he said they get into more and more countries. But, you know, one of the things is they do it December 10th, and it's like, you know how freezing it is there? I mean, it's freezing. And it's like, and it turns dark at 3:30. And so they do that because it's the anniversary of Alfred Nobel's death. But he's like, well, too bad he didn't die in June. And it's been, I think the Nobel Prizes are 110 years old this year. I think that's right. And I was thinking, couldn't you just change it to June? I mean, do you know what I mean? I was thinking that's probably why they don't get the coverage that you would think, because it's right before the holidays and no one wants to go there necessarily because it's freezing and, you know, it's kind of hard to get to. So, my goal is to take what we shot, you know, and do it into vignettes so that people, and then put it out there so a younger, hipper, and just bigger crowd here can kind of get to know what's going on. Do you know, out of the winners in economics, physics, and chemistry, there were 6 winners. You know, there was like 3-1, 2-1, you know what I mean? And 5 of them were Americans.
Wow.
Yes, and the other one was Israeli. But, I mean, Americans are doing amazing things, you know? And I know that their group knows it, but I would like for us to... Look, I would just like to know about those things on a behind-the-scenes cool way, besides just what Kim Kardashian was wearing or when she got married. Do you know what I mean? Or what Courtney Love is doing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
What housewives are up to. I mean, fine, there's room for that, but can we also, like, hear about things that are, like, you know, intelligent and cool and, like, changing the world and, like, bettering all of our lives? I mean, you know, but presented in a cool way. So that's my next project.
I get it. So do a reality show of mm-hmm. you being behind the scenes at the Nobel Peace Prize. Now,
yeah.
That would make for fascinating TV and one that we could all be educated instead of the superficial things that are going on in life, right?
Oh, cool. Well, I'm glad you like that because I have an idea that incorporates that. Yeah, so that was one of the reasons I kind of went to the Nobel Prizes to to get a sketch. I call it a sketch of what I see. Like even Epiphany, you know, what's exciting about Epiphany is that I did a website. So all the people in the book, plus some that I've had the opportunity to film, they're all on the website with like their bio and their links to, so people can go use it as a resource and watch videos of them and see pictures and such. Well, now, you know, our, the tablets that are coming out for reading, the next digital book I want to do will have links and video. You know, we're able to do that now, so you don't have to go to the website, right? You could do it right there on your digital book. So that's the other thing I want to do. Yeah.
Wow.
It's so exciting, technology and what we're able to do now, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the exciting thing. And you know the other thing about going to the Nobel Prizes, and I also spoke at TED.
Yes.
Right before I did that. And I got invited. I didn't apply. I didn't ever consider ever doing like that big of a speaking engagement so quickly. And, you know, what I want to say just to that is that you can manifest your dreams, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes things happen to you accidentally, kind of like Epiphany. I always wanted to do Epiphany Project. I didn't know it would be a book, you know. But I mean, it is amazing. I mean, I was like, wow, I really can manifest this stuff. It may take a few years, but eventually it does happen, you know? So anyway, just as any encouragement, it was just like a couple of dreams of mine came true quickly.
So let me ask you specifics about that then.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that you manifested it? Did you feel it into existence, or did you just believe something great was going to happen, or... What do you think happened?
I think for me, I get an idea, right? Like I was like, I want to interview Nobel laureates. I want to do this Epiphany Project. And I just am like a dog with a bone. Like I write lists all the time. I'm a big writer and I'll write a list, Nobel Prize, no, for years. You know, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? I'm a big believer in vision boards. Everyone I tell do vision board, we can't believe the results of that. Also, this project, I have to say, has really helped me heal, has really, I've developed my faith and trust in life.
Good.
I'm developing how to really stay present. I'm a big projector into the future all the time. So these people that I've interviewed have renewed my faith in life and people and trusting life. And when you trust life, there's something about that, you know, not knowing what the next step is going to be. In fact, Kristen Neff, I used a quote from her that opens my book. It's like, you know, the epiphany for me was like a door opened and my job was to walk through it. You know, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know what was next, but in life, you never know what's going to happen. But what the epiphany did is make me trust life and know that I just need to keep walking through the doors. And that's why I opened the book with that quote, because that's what that project did for me, and that's what I've learned by practicing and doing this. And, you know, I talk about the four things about epiphanies: listening, paying attention, you know, listening to the world around you, listening to others, being present, listening, getting quiet, quieting your mind, you know. I do that by writing and walking, and now I'm learning how to meditate. But some people do it all a myriad of ways, meditating, prayer, painting, whatever it is for you. Quieting the mind, listening, believing in it, trusting, finding ways to listen, finding ways to believe in yourself, believing in life. That might mean teachers, classes, therapists, church, books. Doing little things that develop your trust and belief in yourself, you know, and then taking action in life. You know, I didn't say, oh, I want to go to the Nobel Prizes and do nothing about it. I figured out I started emailing. I emailed those people. It went on for months till we really figured out, you know, and what happens is then I talk about serendipity coming into play. So we got press accreditation, and we're not with like New York Times or anything. Both of us have written books, but we're not like, you know, on staff with, you know, any major magazine or newspaper, but they gave us press accreditation. And so then we got free tickets. We got free tickets on American at the last minute with the lowest mileage thing. Do you know what I mean? Like,
wow.
Like in November to get to go over there. And then someone had an apartment we could stay in. And then, you know, just like serendipity happens. Wow. It's like the universe says, yes, this is right for you. Yes, keep going. Yes. And you take that step, knowing not what the next step is, and then it's revealed. And then the next step, and the next step. And this, because I've had the privilege of, I experienced it, and then I've interviewed hundreds of people that this continues to happen to. So I have the privilege of knowing that. But if you read the book, you'll see. If you start talking to other people, and if you examine your own epiphanies and your own, or maybe it's not an epiphany, maybe just like your inner voice or what you know is true for you, start examining that. And you know that if you take a little action, see what happens. Okay. And I say take the tiniest baby step. Send an email, you know. Look up a class that's interesting to you, you know, that might lead you towards what you feel like you want to write. You feel like you want to act. You feel like you want to paint. See what's online in your area for a class. That's all you have to do. When I was getting a divorce, my epiphany that sparked the idea for the book made me leave a marriage. And all I did was go on Craigslist and look for sublets. That's all I did for probably a couple of weeks till I saw one that I finally had the strength to email. And that was the one I got. That then led to a whole other myriad of a story that I'm writing now. Do you know what I mean? So I just encourage people to do those things. And it doesn't necessarily have to be with an epiphany necessarily. I'm learning that those are the things I do in my own life. And just it's like magic's happening.
Yes. Well, there is something that I've noticed is that you are projecting a lot of enthusiasm, high energy, and passion. And I would tend to think that that is so valuable with the action that it sort of just pushes everything into gear, the love of what you're doing, the excitement of going to the Nobel Peace Prize and just knowing everything's coming into place. My goodness, your energy had to be sky high.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I say that what I've learned about interviewing so many people's greatest epiphanies in life have to do with their career and what they're doing. So I interviewed, and I ended up interviewing a lot of people who are really successful. And most of these people are very fulfilled by life because they listen to what made their heart sing, you know? And look, in my case, too, I'm listening to my heart sing. Now, I don't make a lot of money yet. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, shoot. You know, I still get scared. I still go, oh. But I have to trust because you can't believe story after story after story. And, you know, to follow those gifts and talents, and what the gifts and talents are what makes your heart sing. This is what I've learned. So whatever makes you have joy and makes time disappear and that you love, that is what. Now, it might be a hobby. Do you know what I mean? Whatever, you don't have to necessarily have to be your career. I've heard Oprah talk about that. But you must do that because that then serves others accidentally.
Yes.
It's not arbitrary. And then you get energized by life. I found all these successful people, they're like, and when I say successful, they may not be world renowned, but they're successful in their lives, meaning they're fulfilled by what they're doing. Their personal lives are thriving. And then they have energy then to reach out at the world, to the world at large, like these Nobel Peace Prize women, right?
Yeah.
Some of them had no money. They're but they did what made their heart sing, what they were convicted about. And it gave them energy to go and energy to have their own, you know, to be fulfilled by what they were doing and then reach out in a bigger way. And you can do this as a homemaker. You can do this as a minister, people doing this as a filmmaker, you know, as a writer, people who are doctors. I mean, I've interviewed just so many people. It doesn't matter as long as, you're listening to what your heart is telling you to do. And does your action have to be?
Do you think that these three women thought that they ever would get the Nobel Peace Prize? I mean, do you think that they even put it into their dreams? Do you think that they even knew what it was?
No. They might have known what it was. I mean, Johnson Sirleaf, she's the president of Liberia. So they knew what it was, but no, I don't think so. I think I didn't get to interview them one-on-one, but I saw a lot of one-on-one interviews that they did. And in fact, the Nobel Prizes just sent me the newsletter, and there's video on there, so I'm going to put it up on my Facebook and Twitter it, and so people are looking to see what they did, you know, as well. But I think that I did interview one-on-one a lot of the laureates, like I said, in chemistry and in physics and economics, and none of them think about that. None of them think about, oh, the rewards, oh, the awards. They don't think about that. They think about what they're doing and the love they have for what they're doing and their colleagues. Everybody expressed so much love for their colleagues and what they were doing. And, you know, and then this. But they also said, this is so great and this is so amazing, but it doesn't really have a bearing on my life. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It doesn't, I mean, it's fabulous and whatever. And, like, other opportunities come and people get more recognition of their work. And so they get more grant money, I'm assuming, and things like that. But as far as touching them, you know, they already loved what they were doing. It's like icing on the cake. So I think really, I don't think these actors who are nominated for the Academy Awards, you know, the Academy Awards season's going on right now. I'm in LA. And it's like, I don't think they thought about that when they were doing their performance. You know, they were just doing what they do. They were serving the story. They were doing the best they could to give over. And I rarely hear of someone who, like, wanted the prize. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
Was going for it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, no, I think it's fueled, as you brought up, love and enthusiasm and passion for what they were doing and the lifelong work, you know?
Yeah. Well, if it's all love and enthusiasm and energy, well, I see you winning the Nobel Peace Prize, too, because the message that you're bringing people is one of inspiration. And in this time, all this time that we're going through right now, that's what we need to keep on going day to day, just be inspired and have our epiphanies and know and trust that life is grand.
Yeah, and taking action, you know, we all need each other. And everyone can take that tiniest baby step towards what they feel is true for them and see what happens. You never know.
You never know. Elise, this has been so much fun. Thank you. And tell people how they can get your book.
Oh, my book is on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all of that. But if you go to my website, www.epiphanychannel.com, you can see how it's spelled right there, E-P-I-P-H-A-N-Y, channel.com. You can buy the book right there on the homepage. And you can also, which I'd love for you to share your epiphanies with me, with us, and I post them periodically. I'm collecting more stories for another collection of books and stories. You know, there's a blog where I put different stuff up there, and you can go look at everybody's videos and see their websites and bios and my experience of the interview on the website as well. And plus, besides just people in the book, also, you know, other people I interviewed. So you can go do that, and then, of course, I'm on. And you can also go and follow us on Facebook, on Twitter. There's a mailing list I'm going to start sending out. I'm going to be teaching, I think, at the Entheos Academy soon. So there'll be news about that, and you can always just go check in over there. So
absolutely.
I'd love for everyone to join our community and share with us.
Hey, can we see your TED interview or your TED speaking engagement on the YouTube at all?
Yeah. Well, they haven't edited yet. I just did it December 4th, December 3rd, and it was at TEDxSMU.org. So when that is, I'll send you the link.
Right.
But they have to edit it, you know. So I don't know. I just saw her, and I think it'll be up in the next couple of months.
Okay.
But I'll definitely let you know. But it's and also I'll put it up on my website.
Good.
It's good. No.
I'm sure it will be. I'm sure. I have no doubt about it.
And it's TEDxSMU.org. So yeah. So I'll keep you posted on that. Thanks so much, Jules. What a fun interview. And thanks so much for having me on. It's a real privilege and honor.
I love it. And I want you to come back and share more inspiration with us. Okay.
Okay. My pleasure. Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care. And to all my wonderful listeners, we'll see you back here next week. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
As we close another show, it is my sincerest wish that you have a wonderful week ahead. Remember, through you, the world changes to reflect your happiness. If you'd like to comment on today's show, please send me an email to Jules@LOARadionetwork.com.